I love talking about baseball. Of course, I grew up in it. I love it. I love to play baseball.
The Cincinnati Reds had a farm team in the city where I grew up, the Topeka Reds.
Oh, Topeka, Kansas.
Yeah, Johnny Vandermeer was the manager.
Oh,
time.
John.
And I remember going out to that old ramshackle ballpark many an evening.
Johnny Vandermeer was at Tulsa when Gabe Paul and Roger Hornsby come down there to scout me, and he pitched one of those games in that series that they watched me play it. In fact, he hit me right in the seat of pants. I hit a home run off of him, and he says, "I'll get you next time, kid." And I said, "Well, if you hit me right in the eye, it won't even make it bloodshot. I ain't worried about you." And he threw at me four times with an old inside slider, and he hit me in the seat of britches with a spitball. Didn't hurt any because we had sliding pads on. But he was a great, great man, great guy.
Pitchers at that time, who gave you the most problems, and who did you touch the most often?
Oh boy, I'd love to talk about this, because remember me telling you back early, my first time at bat, I faced Warren Spahn, and he struck me out on a called third strike that I thought was questionable. But Jocko and Hornsby, I wasn't going to argue with those two men. But anyway, I hit Warren Spahn as good as I hit anybody. I think I ended up my career off in him probably 400 and something. And he never could fool me with a pitch. I guess I was so determined, because he was the first one I faced that he was never going to get me out again. So I hit Warren very good. I hit Robin Roberts very well. Most all of the pitchers that had the publicity and won a lot of games, the good pitchers, I hit very well. But there was a pitcher at St. Louis that I could touch. And he later went on from St. Louis to the White Sox and helped them win the World Series, win a pennant, was Jerry Staley. I could not get that bat on the ball off of Jerry Staley, and I don't know why. But every time he went out there, I was just a big out. If I got three foul balls off of him, I think that was about as good as I did. If I got a base hit off of him, I don't remember. And I should, I remember most of them, because I didn't have all that many. But Jerry Staley was the toughest guy in the National League for me to hit. I didn't mind any of the rest of them. Vinegar Ben Mizell could throw the ball right through that wall. But he didn't bother me any. Pittsburgh had Bob Friend. The Phillies with Kurt Roberts and Robin Roberts, or Kurt Simmons and Robin Roberts and that big, tall, lanky guy. I can't remember his name. And the Cubs had Bob Rush and guys like that. And Sad Jones,
that's
the toothpick.
Jones, right.
Let me tell you a story about Sam Jones. I was traded from Cincy to the Phillies after I got injured in 1954, late in the season, and ultimately ended my major league career. And still carry it with me today. And developed an injury sliding in the second base, and it broke down the main circulatory blood vessel in my leg, and as a result, I got blood clots, and it turned into thrombophlebitis, and that was the beginning of the end for me. But I was traded to the Phillies in 55, early 55, and I told them that I wasn't 100%, and I wasn't, but evidently Gabe Paul and Bertie Tibbetts, who was the manager of Cincinnati at that time, had told them that I was. So, and I said, "Well, nobody asked me. If you'd asked me, I would have told you that I'm not, and I'm not." And anyway, Fred Haney was the general manager, and Mr. Carpenter, of course, was the owner. So after they talked it out, they decided, "Well, we're going to get you fixed, and we want you." So they sent me to Johns Hopkins Hospital, and we worked out, got all that taken care of. I didn't play much that year. They got my leg fixed and all my problems straightened out. Then the following year, we start out the season. My first time up as a Philly, I hit a home run. Bad mistake to do in Philly. Philly fans are rabid fans, and they see you do something good the first time they ever see you. They expect you to do that from now on. Of course, which isn't the case. But that was part of it. And anyway, got the leg fixed up. And let me catch this phone.
When you went over to the Phillies, you were with you joined up with the one player who went into the Hall of Fame, certainly Robin Roberts.
Oh yes, yes, and Robbie was a
wonderful pitcher,
great pitcher, and a fine gentleman. fine athlete and a what we call a good guy. He wasn't ate up with himself. He didn't have the big ego and stuff like that. He was just a regular guy, and great fun to be around. And worked hard at his craft through every day, and ran every day, and so did Kurt Simmons. And just a great guy. There's no way they could keep Robin Roberts from being in the Hall of Fame. He was the greatest right-hand pitcher going in that day and time. And he had the best control of anybody. That's why he was a pleasure to hit against, because you knew he had such good control, he's going to throw the ball in the strike zone. Your problem was hitting it when he got it in there. But I was always in there good, and I managed to hit him fairly well and beat him two or three games, which he disliked me for very much. Because pitchers remember those things, you know. And they say, how did you hit that ball? It was low and away. And I said, well, you know, I saw my son yesterday, and we were playing in the yard, and I saw him swing the bat light. And I thought, boy, that's the way I need to hit. And he'd just get all upset. I said, you lying so-and-so. But he was just a great guy to be around, but a hard worker. Those fellows in those days, Williams, Musial, Robbie, all of those guys, didn't become great and get in the Hall of Fame by accident. And they were the good Lord gave them the physical body. But they had to develop that. And through their integrity and their work and their stress and their sacrifice, and those that ball players sacrificed a lot, including a lot at home with family, to be away to play. And they practiced every day. There's never a day went by that we weren't doing something. If we didn't practice in the morning, we'd get out before the ball game started and had our infield and very serious about this practice business and hitting practice and infield practice and outfield, taking balls in the outfield. And I used to run guys out of the outfield, out of left field. I said, hey, left field belongs to me. I want to catch the ball off in everybody that's taking batting practice. And that's how I learned to get a jump on the ball and got to baseballs and made catches that other guys had trouble getting to if they got to them at all. But you learn to get the jump. You learn to... You tell about the guys today, and then what you're talking about.
What was it like playing next to one of the greatest defensive center fielders of all time?
Richie Ashby?
Right.
It was a riot. And I'll tell you why. Rich is a super guy and a great leadoff hitter. I don't know if there's a place in the Hall of Fame for leadoff hitters. He ought to be in there because he would have three steps to first base before the batter made contact with the ball. But Richie had a bad habit as an outfielder, and everybody was, of course, aware of it. And you had to learn this. And you had to really be on your toes, because as soon as the ball was hit up in the air, Richie would holler, "I got it!" It didn't matter where in the ballpark it was at. He had it, and he was going. I mean, he was going, and he could get there.
He was fast, wasn't he?
Oh yes, very fast, very fast. But 30,000, 40,000 people screaming in the fans. In the stands, when that ball is hit, there's a big scream, and that's when Richie would holler, "I got it!" And then from then on, he'd never say another word, and he'd just go after that ball. Well, if it happened to be over in your area, and you're going like poor Dell Ennis, they ran together I don't know how many times. It's a wonder either one of them survived. But Richie would never say another word. And Dell was going over there, you know, and said, well, it's easy play. He made about five steps, and here comes the ball. Here comes Richie. Zoom, like the Roadrunner, and bang, make the catch. Well, every once in a while they would collide, so you had to be very careful playing next to Richie. He's a great outfielder. He could cover that ground. He covered Dixie like the do, as we'd say. But I'll tell you what, and the ball when the ball was hit and it started up, he'll eat all, or I got it, and that's the last you'd hear of him. Well, we were taught in Cincinnati by Tibbetts and Hornsby that when the ball goes out the outfielder, you wait till the ball starts its downward flight. See where it's going to be. Then if you're there, if you've got it, you got a good beat out of you, then you start hollering, I got it, and let the other guy know. And we only let the center fielder do the calling. And if we keep going as a left fielder or a right fielder after that ball until we heard the center fielder. And if he says, I got it, then you back off and let him have it. But if he didn't say anything, you kept going and make the catch. Well, with Richie hollering as soon as the ball went up, by the time you get to the ball, and you're listening and you don't hear him, so you're reaching for the ball, and here comes, zoom, here comes the Roadrunner. So it was thrilling. It was thrilling to play the outfield. I didn't get to play that much because of the injury, but it was thrilling to play next to Rich, because he was so extremely fast, and he was good. He was a good outfielder and a tough competitor, good ball player. He could run, and he could hit. He would swing that bat, and he'd hit a ball back to the pitcher and nearly beat it out to first base. In fact, if the pitcher happened to bobble the ball, he'd beat it.
Or I suspect if it was like a high bouncer that the pitcher feels.
Or a real race. He would hit one of those choppers into the hole in the third or short, you know, and they go over and feel that ball and make a throw that normally they get somebody out. Rich is already walking back to the bag. He'd already crossed home first base. Tremendous.
Was that injury that you had, is that the reason that you played some third base again when you were with the Phillies?
No. The reason I played third base one time in Milwaukee against the Milwaukee Braves was that Willie Jones come down sick. Bobby Morgan was the other utility infielder, and he was sick. So he had nobody to play third base. So having been a third baseman starting out in my career, they decided to put me on third base. Well, Eddie Wakis was the first baseman. He had come back, and Eddie was playing first base. So I said, sure, I'll give it a whack. Yeah, I haven't been on the infield in a long time, but, you know, I'll get in there, and I can handle ground balls, no problem. I had a good ground ball. So I had two plays come up during that game that ended my third baseman as far as Mayo Smith, who was our manager at Philly at that time, was concerned. First one was a slow hit ball between the mound and me going toward the shortstop. And I went over, and I got the ball, and I come up firing. And like I said before, I had a good arm. And Wakis was used to Willie Jones, who would always flip the ball to it. Well, I didn't flip. I got the ball, and I was taught in the Yankee organization to get that ball, get around, take that step, and gun that guy. Hit him in the chest with it. And I turned that ball loose, and Eddie reached out for that ball like this with his glove, and it went zoom right past his head. I went into shock. I couldn't believe it. He never saw it. He never saw the ball. And I said, my God, if that had hit him, it would kill him. But he reached out to get the ball like this, and, you know, and just... went right past him. Well, I need to say that shook some people. Then there was a high fly ball, foul ball hit. Up. I'm one of those guys who goes up above the light towers. Way up there. And I'm over there at third, and I'm trying to remember now. I know the ball's got that different spin when it's in here, and it'll go out this way. But then because of the spin, it reverses and it'll come back towards you. So I'm up there, and I'm trying to remember that. And the ball is up there, seemed like forever, and I get, well, it's right about here. And then all of a sudden, it starts drifting. And then I start drifting with it. And the more it drifted, the more I drifted. Pretty soon, I did run after that poo, and I had to dive. But luckily, I caught that one. I was on the ground. The people were hysterical, you know. It was unbelievable. But anyway, I made that catch. And when that game finally ended, I don't even remember the score now. I tried my best to forget about the whole thing. In fact, I would have forgot about it had you not brought it up. But they never asked me to play third base again. But I could field ground balls. I was a good fielder. I was a very good fielder, as a matter of fact. And I had a lot of comments about I put my face down on the ball. I never you know, looked this way and caught it over here. I never turned my head. I was always on to that ball. And I could judge the ball pretty well as far as getting a good hop or a bounce, that you might say. Feel the ball and play, and not let the ball play me, be backing up. I always charge the ball. And I had no problem with that. But poor Eddie over there was used to Willie's throws. And boy, when I uncorked that, I thought, oh, my God.
Almost lost his head.
Oh, you know, and he had just recovered from being shot. You know, he was shot with crazy woman in Chicago, and so I thought, oh my God. But anyway, I didn't have to play third anymore after that. Mayo Smith made sure of that. So that ended that.
You mentioned Jocko Conlon earlier on. What about the other business you had with umpires? You ever had any run-ins with them?
No, sir. I never had any trouble with umpires, and I'll tell you why. One of the reasons. Of course, when I was in the minor leagues coming up, I never gave an umpire a bad time. Never did. Never did in high school. But the reason I never did in the big leagues, and the reason I think it finally come to life to me as to why, and I was already doing it, I didn't have to be told, but still, was that Roger Hornsby made a statement to me one day. He said, Jim, don't ever turn around and show an umpire up. If an umpire calls a third strike on you, and this happened right after my first at bat in the big leagues, If it's close enough for him to call a strike, it's close enough that you should have been swinging at the ball. So don't blame him for you being out. You're up there with a bat to do one thing. Hit the ball. Go up there swinging. Don't take a third strike. If that ball's close enough to hit, let that bat go. You'll get more hits and as many hits off in bad pitches as you will good pitches. And if they're an inch or two off the plate, what difference does it make? If you can hit it, hit it. That's what you're up there for. I never forgot that. And I'll tell you what, I didn't take very few third strikes after that. But I was going to tell you a story about Sam Jones, the toothpick guy. Yeah. Was in Chicago. I was with the Phillies. And I pinch hit against left-handers. My leg was bad. So the only time I'd be in the game was the left-hander was pitching. Well, this day, Jones was pitching. Pitching a tight ball game. We had a tight ball game, 2-1, something like that. Kurt Simmons was pitching for us. It's about the seventh inning, and we get two men on, and Kurt's due to hit. Kurt wasn't a great hitter. So Mayo Smith's looking down the bench for someone to pitch hit against Jones. And, of course, everybody is hiding because Jones had that very wicked curveball, sidearm curveball, and a tremendous fastball. He could throw hard. So everybody's kind of shimmying and hiding. And so I'm on the end of the bench, so I just stepped off the bench and stood down in kind of like the runway. And Mayo leaned down, and he looked down that bench, and the only one he saw, I guess, down there was me. He said, "Greengrass, get a bat." And Robin Roberts and all the guys on the bench started snickering, "Hey, Jim, you're going to get to see a right-hander today, aren't you?" And boy, why me? You know, why is he picking me to hit? I haven't hit against a right-hander in 2 months. And this guy of all people. So I go up there, and Clyde McCullough was the catcher. Little Clyde, just a wonderful man, great man, I love him, was their catcher. So I get up to the plate, and I'm thinking of all the things Tibbetts taught me about psychology. Okay, you know, tell them, you know, how hot it is. It was, of course, you always play in the afternoon in Chicago. And I said, "Boy, it's hot, it's miserable, and I haven't seen a right-hander. I don't know why he's got me up here. Well, I don't know why he wants me to hit against this guy." And I've tried my best to break Clyde's concentration so he will call for a fastball. Because Jones's curveball is a wicked curveball. And you're going to see why in a minute. So I'm talking to him with all this psychosis. I said, "Boy, I'll be glad when this sucker's over. I don't even know why I'm up here. I'm so tired and beat up. I've been out all night in it. Man, I don't need to be up here. You know, I'll get this over with in a hurry." And I'm just waiting, and I'm waiting. Fastball. Boy, he's going to get... Well, the first pitch he threw was right back here behind me, coming at me like this. And I said, "Oh, no." And I dropped down the ground and hit the dirt. That ball goes, shoom, strike one. That wicked curveball. He threw it behind you. And it's hard to hang in there. And because he threw it so hard. So I get up off the ground and the whole other place is just roaring. And our guys in the dugout are laughing their tails off. You know, I said, So I'm dusting off and I get up and I said, "Well, I'm still going to work my psychology." And so I said, "Man, that's no way to treat a guy. I haven't seen a right-hander in 3 months, and here he throw me that wicked curveball. Come on, Clyde. What kind of sport is that anyway? You know, you ought to take it easy on a guy. Jeez, can't run, can't do nothing. I'm up here. All I want to do is survive, you know." He just kind of grinning. I'm ready to hit that fastball. Here it come again. I dive and hit that ground, and I dust fly. Zoom, strike two. Boy, by then, the whole place was just in an uproar. Everybody, and even Sam had a grin on his face. They just laughing, and old Clyde says, and I think the umpire, I want to say Dusty Borges. I don't know, though, really, if it was Dusty or not. He usually was in Chicago when we were there. But I think it was Dusty. But anyway, they were all having a ball with me then. Oh, man, I looked funny ducking out of the way of that curveball, and it coming over right, strike right in the middle of the plate. So I get up, and I didn't say another word. I just got up and I gritted my teeth and I said, "No matter what, I'm going to hang in there this time. And if I can reach that ball, I'm going to whack it." So I got in there. And of course, in those days, it was always kind of the status quo for a pitcher. You get two strikes on a hitter, then you waste one up high or somewhere out of the strike zone. Then you come back with the same pitch you get him out on. And usually that would work. So I'm just gritting my teeth. I said, "I'm not moving. that ball's where I can reach it. I'm going to hit it. Well, he tried to waste a fastball right about eye high, cut across there. And I tommyhawked that sucker in the dead center field seats. Well, our dugout just went bananas. Old Clyde behind the plate, he was furious, and Jones is looking at that ball, and he's cussing me all the way around the bases. You saw that's a 2-0 pitch. What are you hitting? That's a waste. You gotta hit that ball. He just raised and came at me, and I come across the plate, and Clyde was standing there. I said, how do you like that, you little so-and-so? And he followed me all the way to the dugout. He said, right behind, you'll never get another fastball as long as you live, Greengrass. You hear me? Never will you ever get another fastball as long as I'm catching. Oh, he was mad. So I got my little moment in the sun and revenge on him for knocking me down twice with strikes.
I think you won the battle.
But it was, I'll never forget that if I live to be 1,000. That was a great afternoon for me. And I had to laugh at Mayo, because Mayo was laughing. He said, what can I say, Jim? I said, I saw you, and we don't have, you know, I didn't want to use my left-handed pinch hitter right now because it was a little too early in the game. And anyway, that home run got us out in front, and we ended up beating them.
Right.
So, but Lord, they had a ball with me. And Sad Jones and Clyde McCulloch didn't speak to me again the rest of the year. Of course, this was into the season, probably later July or August, somewhere in there. And but it was a great, great experience against Sam. He was a great pitcher. Oh, he was tough, a tough, tough pitcher. That hard, hard, fast curveball he had. And then his fastball was hard and was always moving. And he didn't have a great control. And that's how we could stay close to him. You just go up there and take two strikes on him, make him throw you strikes. And that's how we got into him. But he was a tough pitcher. Oh, yeah, man, he was tough.